Hello and welcome once again to the Greg Hughes podcast. Well, in 2013, following the tragic loss of their 26-year-old son, Kevin, in New York, a massive community fundraising effort left Ethna and Colin Bell with a surplus of funds. Instead of looking inwards, they used that money to help another grieving family bring their child home. What began almost by chance, yet deeply guided by Kevin's memory, became the Kevin Bell Repatriation Trust. Today, we're joined by Ethna and Colin. We discuss how dramatically their lives changed in an instant, their recent decision to hand daily operations over to a dedicated staff for some well-deserved time to themselves, and how this incredible legacy has now repatriated 2,500 people who died abroad. This is their story. Colin and Ethna Bell, founders of the Kevin Bell Repatriation Trust, thank you so much for joining us.
Delighted to be here, Greg.
It's great to have you on in the programme. Do you have Donegal connections, or do you visit or holiday in Donegal?
Well, we've always loved Donegal. I mean, I went to the Gaeltacht for years, and we have a house up in Gordahork.
Lovely.
Which, unfortunately, we don't get up to often enough, but hopefully we will in the future.
Yes, it's great to have these. It's great to have it. It's about utilizing it and getting
totally
the time, isn't it?
Totally,
it is.
Reports of your retirement are premature, I think. You referenced about wanting to spend more time together. Having more time to spend at your house and all that type of stuff. But you're not actually stepping away. You're just restructuring a little bit. Is that right?
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, it has grown so big. And it's really too big for the small staff that we had. There was only, for 10 years, 12 years, there was only myself and Maria in the office. And we're at a stage now where there are so many repatriations. I mean, we have 22 repatriations on the go at the moment. And last in June, there were 37 repatriations. So it's just got too big for the small staff we had. So we have appointed a new director of operations, Jamid McCauley, and Olivia has joined the staff. Unfortunately, Maria has left. And we'll hopefully be recruiting another member, which means, I mean, as I said, for 13 years, I mean, I was on the end of the phone 24/7. And even when we did get away on holiday, I mean, I still was answering the phone and arranging repatriations. So now with a bigger staff, I don't have to be on the answer the phone 24/7 and now that enables us. I mean, we were at a wedding. Ethna's brother's daughter was married in France a fortnight ago, and we were able to go and no phone with us. So it's, I mean, I'll still be in the office every day, five days a week, and I'll still be doing repatriations, and I'll still be going up and down the country. But if we want to go on holiday, we can go on holiday, and so not stepping.
You'll keep the hand on the tiller.
Oh, absolutely.
So to speak,
we'll still be there. You know,
I just wonder, and we'll get to the establishment of this amazing organization, because it was born from your own unimaginable loss. But in a way, for both of you, and I'll start with you, Ethna. Did it suit you to be so busy? Because, I mean, was that sort of part of processing your own incredible loss? In other words, you know, the idle mind and all that type of stuff.
Well, we always would have been a very busy household. And as I say, whenever Kevin was killed, our lives took a different path, not necessarily in a bad direction. And it has helped us cope with our grief, because we can empathise with the families that we help. And it's lovely to meet some of the families afterwards and sit down and have a chat and talk and learn about the loved one that they lost, and speak about Kevin, speak about their loved ones. And that brings a great comfort to us.
Yeah, because the service you provide, it reminds me a little bit like the hospice, for an example. It doesn't take away the grief or the loss, but it takes away an awful lot of the stuff around it.
Yeah.
And I think that's why if someone has had to use the repatriation trust, they become fundraisers for it or advocates for it. And it does remind me a little bit of the hospice. It has that place in the darkest of times for people.
Yes, there you do find a comfort whenever you can share your grief with other people who have experienced the same thing.
Was the busyness in the early days of it, did that suit you, Colin?
To be honest, the trust was set up by accident. We didn't originally intend to set up a trust, but circumstances, when Kevin was killed, there was so much money raised to bring Kevin home. In the people of Newry, South Down, South Armagh, and other places, in the space of a week, had raised £150,000 to bring Kevin home. And of course, it didn't cost that. And we had this money that wasn't ours. And I think it was a week after Kevin's death, and we saw in the news about a young fellow from Carriduff had been killed in Thailand. So we reached out to the family and said, look, we have this money, we'll pay to bring your son home. The next week we saw a young fellow, Connor Brady from Sligo, was killed in Las Vegas. So again, we reached out, and week on week, because when it comes to your door, you'll see it in newspapers and it'll stand out to you because you know that the family are starting on that journey that you're on.
Would you have been aware of so many families needing this type of support until, unfortunately, like, I'm just thinking of you dealing with this awful news of your own son, and then all of a sudden thinking, why would this happen to us? It must be incredibly rare. And then the next week, and then the next week, and names that have stuck with you forever, a family after a family going through it. It must have been like, wow, this is happening an awful lot.
Well, whenever it does happen to you, you're totally more aware about it. We are aware that other people from Newry and different places have been killed and died abroad. And then the families were left in the situation to bring their loved ones home. But whenever it comes knocking at your door, you become totally, it shouts out at you. Every news and even people will say that, families that we have helped, they said somewhere in the background, we might have heard about the Kevin Bell Repatriation Trust and never took much heed. But whenever it comes to your door, all of a sudden, you're totally aware of everybody else who's thrown into the same situation.
And we'll talk more about that, but I want to learn a bit more about Kevin, if that's okay, because this has all been done in his honour. This, unfortunately, there's going to be an awful lot of people listening who've been predeceased and we're just not built for it, we're not prepped for it, and it's just an awful situation for anyone to have to go through. But talk to me about Kevin and what kind of a kid he was, Ethna.
Kevin was, we were married in 84, and 10 months later we had Sean and Kira, and then 13 months after that we had Kevin and Brendan, and then Eamon, Connor and Maeve. So whenever Maeve was born, Sean and Kira were only turning 6 in May, and she was born in April. So we were always a very close family, a big family, and having the two sets of twins, apart from then the three singles, we were well known about the town and whatever. Kevin was the only redhead that we had, and he was full of devilment.
Feisty.
Just a great character. If anybody is ever speaking about Kevin, it's always with a smile on their face, because he was a great prankster. He loved fancy dress. He just loved life. He worked two jobs to be able to earn enough money to be able to travel off somewhere else. He never would have sat in the house watching TV.
Great sense of adventure, then.
Total adventure, yeah. He just, himself and his friend James might have driven from Newry to Derry just for a cup of coffee on a Saturday morning, just to give them something to do.
I love that.
Other than being idle about the place. He just loved life.
Yeah. Kevin, your memories? Colin, your memories of Kevin?
Well, much the same. He was a big character, and when speaking to people, if Kevin was in the room, you'd know Kevin was in the room, you know. But as I say, not a bad bone in his body, always smiling, loved to travel and just embraced life. Never wasted a second. We know that when Kevin died, he was having his best time.
He was in New York at that time.
He was in New York, yes.
As much as you're comfortable, how much do you remember, Colin, of that day and the circumstances surrounding his death?
Ah, well, we were so lucky. We didn't get a cold call. Kevin had gone out to a friend of his, Seamus Toner, who was living in New York, and Kevin had gone out to stay with him and loved New York and stayed on. And on that morning, it was 13 years ago, it was the 16th of June. I was actually 60 on the 15th of June, and myself and two of our sons were out the back putting up a gazebo because people were coming up to celebrate, family were coming to celebrate my 60th birthday. And I got called into the house, and Seamus Toner's parents, Caroline and Vinny, were there. And what had happened was Seamus had heard about it, and he had phoned his parents immediately and said to get up to the Bells and give them the news before they get a cold call from the police or whatever in New York. So we were so, so lucky that we're so grateful to Caroline and Vinny for doing that, because, as I say, I don't imagine how we would have reacted or what we would have done, to get a cold call, you know.
And what happened to Kevin Athna?
One night in the evening, and he'd actually rung the night before to wish Colin a happy birthday. So I was on the phone to him for about half an hour, and he was saying, I'm the Snapchat king, with the different things that he would do. And he'd got taxi back to his apartment, and whenever he got out the taxi, a white van came.
Do you want to take over? Yeah. He got out of his taxi and was on the pavement, and a white van out of control mounted the pavement and hit him, put him onto the road where another vehicle hit him.
Just and sense, both, no rhyme or reason to it. Is
but both vehicles drove off. Yeah. I suppose mercifully now Kevin was killed instantly. He wouldn't have known an awful lot about it.
The Snapchat king. So he was mad on the social. He'd have loved it now then with TikTok and everything else that's going.
Absolutely. He would have gone back to the apartment and said to his mate, okay, I've got a great idea. And he would have stood as though he was surfing. Yes. He would have had on a pair of shorts, and then he would have drawn waves and surfing USA. Or else he would have been like this and singing Postman Pat, and he didn't have a note in his head, and driven away. Drawn a wee red van, Postman Pat. And then, what's the other one? Another one, Superman. I believe I can fly. I was just actually looking them up on the computer. That was the time you had the screen in front of you.
Yeah.
I was looking up his Snapchats whenever Caroline and Vinny came to the door.
It's so tough, and I'm so sorry, Ethna, for everything that you've gone through. And you, of course,
all
Colin.
The time with me.
Yeah. But it's from a place of love and the happy memories too, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. You always smile when you're thinking about them. Yeah.
So when the next two families after that you were able to help, what is the balance between sort of the financial implications of it and the logistics of it? Because I would imagine, before the repatriation trust was there, where do you even go? All you hear is, the embassy's liaising or something like that there. But what happens now? Was it, which is the biggest strain on a family? Is it the cost or the logistics of even knowing where you might begin?
Well, you get news like that, You know, you might get a cold call and say, like, well, what do we do now? Or who do we contact? Or where do we go? And that's the... I suppose that, when it happened to us, we were so, so lucky. Now, we have taken over 2,500 people home to Ireland. And in the 13 years, there was never a repatriation as quick as our Kevin's. It was unbelievable. Kevin was killed, as I say, at 2:45 on Sunday morning. His post-mortem took place on Sunday afternoon. Ethna's cousin, Nasa Negonal, she lived in New York, and she knew a lot of people in New York. Kevin had been with the Armagh Gaelic team in New York, and the boys from the Gaelic team picked Nasa up, and she would tell them, right, we have to go here. And they would go, and she would get whatever paperwork signed that was needed. Or if she was told to come back, she said, no, I have a family at home. I need to get this signed now. With the result that all Kevin's paperwork was done on the Monday. His body was released to the undertaker on Monday evening. He was on the plane home on Tuesday evening. And he was in our house on Wednesday at lunchtime. There has to be a reason for that, you know. I mean, it was just incredible. So,
and would you? Everyone thinks different, and often we think couples, and they must have this blanket opinion. But like, do both of you share a sense that, you know, sometimes things are just meant to happen not for a reason as such, but there's too much going on for it just to be happen chance.
Yes. Yeah. Well, like, in all honesty, I mean, we believe, rightly or wrongly, you know, but it gives us comfort anyway that Kevin was sent to be the character he was, and to die early, and to be the catalyst for the setting up of this trust.
I defy anyone to contradict you because the evidence is there. 2,500 people. That's mums and dads, granny and granddads, sisters and brothers. The amount of lives his sacrifices touched is just remarkable. And it all began with one of the simplest repatriations compared to the cases that you've dealt with. At what point, after, you know, you were able to offer the financial system assistance to the families of the deceased that died after Kevin, did it become clear there was something here that you could establish, Ethna?
Well, it was just, as I say, whenever it became known to us, and every death that we saw, and we were approaching the people, and then it got to the stage that we thought, right, we possibly can do something more than this. Because actually, 8 months after Kevin was killed, my sister's son, Paul, was killed in San Francisco under the same circumstances.
Not
hit and run. Yeah.
My word.
So Paul was number 13, and that was in February. And whenever you think that Kevin had been killed in the June, so during those few months, we were just looking out, and was very few really. Whenever you think of the numbers that are there at the moment,
but still 13 in that period of time
from
is
June
a lot.
To February.
Then,
yeah.
But obviously compared to the amount of people you've helped since, that's unbelievable. I wasn't aware of that.
It's just a matter of Colin getting into the logistics and who to contact. And so all the people have to do now is contact KBRT and give the name of the deceased, whatever details they can give, where they are at the moment and who they're coming home to.
But I presume that means that over the years, other organisations, be it the consulate or whatever, has had to change for you guys to plug into, if you know what I mean. So what is the process now, once you might get notified of the name of a deceased? Or maybe there's not a one-size-fits-all, but what is the process that happens next?
Well, immediately we go off the phone and the information of where the deceased is and the Bury's coming home too, and the Undertaker at home, and the main point of contact. And then we go straight into. We've so much experience with dealing with Undertakers in certain places like Sydney. We would have our preferred Undertaker, or New York. We would have three or four different Undertakers we use for different areas, for Thailand or for Spain or whatever. We know who to contact.
Wow. Okay.
So it's then, and as I say, like for a long time, we used to have to put the money up front, but now we don't, because we're accepted as being, good characters or whatever.
You've proven yourselves.
Yeah.
But then in terms of, I suppose, say for instance, if it's in an Asian country, the body being released, booking a plane, the logistics of then what happens once the body returns home, is that complicated, or have you?
No. Obviously, you just can't take a body out of a country. Yeah. There has to be, they have to go to a court to get paperwork. But our undertakers that we use in these countries, they will look after paperwork and stuff. So once we contact our undertakers, then the ball's rolling.
So in those early days, then it literally was used too at the kitchen table, really. And this was almost immediately. It's in the year following Kevin's death, so it was straight into helping other people. Looking back, Ethna, did you do an amazing thing with little resources, or were you bluffing it to some extent? Or
whenever you think, for the first 2 years, everything was just at the kitchen table.
Mm.
And then we got a filing cabinet that went into the kitchen as well. And then we were given offices down in the town.
They were gifted, weren't they?
To us, which is unbelievable. But what happened also was whenever we decided to do this in Kevin's honour, we got in contact with Kevin's friends and our own friends. And we have a group of 12 trustees that come from different walks in life, principals of schools, people in accountants, lawyers, and their expertise as well in making sure that everything that we did was all over and above board and correctly sorted out. And those trustees are such an important backbone of us. We would be lost without them.
And in the early days, were you reaching out, or was the word getting around? Like, was it that the official trust, like how soon after Kevin's passing would have been established and known as the Kevin Bell Repatriation Trust?
I would say a couple of months.
Really? Okay, yeah. That quickly.
You see, another reason, as I say, we originally thought, right, we had this £150,000, and we thought, right, we'll pay for, we weren't organising at this, and we thought that once the £150,000 was gone, that would have been the end of it. But a year prior to Kevin being killed, there was a young fella from Castle Wellen in County Down had been killed in Perth, and his parents contacted us and said, look, we have £72,000.
Oh, wow, okay.
So, and the young fellow was Ryan Doyle, they called him Wee Doyler. And so Mr. and Mrs. Doyle contacted us and gave us the £72,000, which was really then the catalyst for us to say, look, we'll make this Kevin's legacy. And we applied to the Charity Commission in Northern Ireland and the Charity Regulator down south, and that's really when we became officially a charity,
Wow, okay. And at that stage and now, who gives, a family the contact details, or do they seek the trust out themselves, or...?
Well, mostly now, there would hardly be a county or a parish in Ireland that hasn't been touched or knows. So a lot of people would if there's a death like that, the family, somebody in the family would say, like, contact the Kevin Bell. Okay. But also, if they contacted the Department of Foreign Affairs, the Department of Foreign Affairs will advise them to contact us and,
yep, that's,
and
give them our number. That's what I was curious about, yep, actually. Yep, yep. And with that in mind, in terms of how it's funded, do you get any state funding at all, either north or south, or is it all through donations?
No, it's all through donations and people doing funding. We're the luckiest charity in Ireland. I mean, we don't have to fundraise for ourselves because there are fundraisers going on for us throughout Ireland every week, and not only in Ireland, anywhere where there's Irish diaspora. I mean, there are fundraisers going on for us in Australia weekly, in New York weekly, and wherever there's Irish,
it's really
diaspora.
Remarkable.
Yeah. It's unbelievable.
And really, I suppose we were offered €100,000 from the Emigrant Support Program. But if we were to take that, I mean, obviously, as I say, there are 22 ongoing at the minute. It's £100,000 will hardly cover even those ones. Mm-hmm. So for us to accept that, it dilutes Kevin. This is Kevin's trust. This is
so
it's his work.
It's a conscious decision to do it the way that you're doing.
Yeah, exactly.
How I describe it, it's Ireland's charity in Kevin's name, because with some of the families that we've helped and the people who don't do the fundraising, they're the ones that who kept the charity going because of the financial support. We do as far as the logistics and that are concerned, but it's the people from Ireland and the diaspora and whatever who are funding it. So it's Ireland's charity in Kevin's name.
Yeah, and it's self-perpetuating, you know.
I don't mean this in any way a criticism or anything like that there, but I mean, you had quite a large family, and obviously, you know, you had the tragic loss of Kevin and then straight into helping others. Often when I speak to families who with multiple children, they sometimes can struggle or to give everyone the attention that they need or what have you. And I'm not saying you neglected get me wrong, but you must have all bought into this as a family then.
Most definitely, because the thing with our family is there was never a single child in the house. We started with twins and then three singles. They always had company. Even whenever Eamon was born, the first single, Sean and Ciara were in just preschool, and they went in and said, "We've got a new brother. There's only one of them. He came by himself."
Oh,
you know, yeah. Because the family are so close. They all, like, Sean's in Dublin, Ciara's at home, Maeve's at home, Eamon's in Australia, Breton's in Dublin, Connor's in New York. So they have their own friends and they can help out with the trust, whether it's Facebook or different things.
So I love the fact they've all bought into it. It's fantastic.
It's Kevin's charity, and they are all behind it.
They're all bells.
100%. All bells.
Yeah, exactly. Mairead Lynam, you mentioned her getting involved. How significant was that just in terms of establishing where we've become now?
Yeah, Mairead, I mean, was terrific. I mean, obviously, I'm not a businessman. I'm not overly gifted with IT. And I mean,
I think that might be an understatement to go to death there, right?
Yeah. But the thing was, I mean, to be part of it, to be an official charity, there's compliance. And I mean, there's record keeping. There's, you know, you have to submit your finances, and Mairead was just brilliant. And she, I mean, for the 10 years that she was with us, like, I mean she really was,
because he's talked about the family buy-in. I think anyone joining it, it's more, it's a buy-in, isn't it? You're sort of committing to the cause, so to aren't you? And listen, we need the oversight and the scrutiny of charities, but I think your average Joe would be surprised at the amount of red tape and all that type of stuff.
But you have to be so compliant about everything and make sure the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed without a shadow of doubt.
You just won the lotto.
We did.
Where did that come out of?
Because Colin does the ladder.
That's in 2017, right? Yeah, won £1 million on the Euro Millions.
That's right.
I can only imagine that Kevin's hand was across this as well.
Had to be. I mean, no doubt about it. And I'm hoping this other hand will
do it again. prove it, Kevin. Send us another million.
Exactly. Yeah.
What was that like? What was? Well,
just amazing. You know, I suppose I don't think it was life changing. You know, like
it just made things very, very comfortable.
Yeah,
we were able to get the house and go to Hawk.
Lovely.
Colin was able to get Croke Park tickets. It just you know, it made things very comfortable.
But it had to plug into what yous were doing. If you know what I mean, didn't it? Because I mean, it was didn't mean that all of a sudden you weren't going to do what you were doing for Kevin and in Kevin's name. So in a way, it could never really alter too much.
Although
except
we didn't move house. We had to stay with the neighbours that we had. We got a bit of an extension on, but there was people were saying, "Oh, you'll move." It's definitely not.
Yeah,
because we were in that house. We Kevin and Brenton were one on the 12th of July. And they had their. We moved into that house on the 10th of July. That's today, isn't it?
The 10th.
Yeah, it is.
So no, we moved into is that it? House 39
it's
years ago.
Sorry, it's the 8th.
The 8th. Oh, the 8th, well, there. Well, yeah. 39 years ago on the 10th of July, we
there
moved into the house because Kevin and Brenton would be 40 on Sunday.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
How did Brendan cope with it?
Brenton.
Did he feel it in a visceral way because of the. Because
what Brenton did, he was in the civil service. And he just thought, gosh, Kevin went so quickly, this isn't for me. And he went back studying, and now he's a master's in pharmacy, and he's working as a locum down south.
You've so much love for your kids, Ethna, don't you?
Yeah. It is.
Is it your kryptonite? Is it your kryptonite, I think?
I'd say he had a very rough time for the first year or two, and that's when he decided, look, life's too short and I'm not happy in what I'm doing and I'm going to do something about it. And
again,
it
affected, this is Kevin's impact, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly, yeah.
It affected them all, but Brent just, it just sorted, he's doing what he's loving and he's so pleased with him. We're so proud of them all.
But he's a particularly strong boy by the sounds of things.
Yeah.
Which is nice, but it's nice he's that strength. But I think it's nice that his brother's watching over him too, and helping him with his life choices. How have you sort of dealt with the, I suppose the publicity around doing what you're doing, or you know the interviews, the notoriety, not notoriety that seems to have negative consequences, the popularity and
because
you can use that and it has helped obviously in terms of getting the message out there.
I mean, I'd be up and down the country weekly. You know, I mean, a while back. Took 2 days, had 4 different Czech presentations in Killarney and Listowel and all around Kerry. So I would go and head there. But I could be out 5-6 nights a week at Czech presentations because, you know, it's good to acknowledge the people that who go out of their way and fundraise for
us. But it
us.
Is, you do realise it's remarkable that you're still doing that. Like, it's a remarkable sign.
It's very good,
sign.
Very good for the marriage, you know.
You sound like my sister when her brother-in-law, my brother-in-law became a long-distance lorry driver. She says it's fantastic. Okay, how's this working?
Yeah.
But but to have that level of you know, appreciation and still the passion and the understanding of what people are doing, it's fantastic.
But you have to have, because whenever a phone call comes through and you just think to yourself, well, God love them, they're just starting their journey now. And we feel the part of the healing process is still with us. As you know, I still get totally emotional. But to meet the other families and to see that they are doing it for the love of their loved one too, and at the same time they know that they're helping other families.
Yeah, it's for the next family.
It is, and do you know, like, who would have thought so much sort of emotion and love and care would come from your sacrifice, Ethna, if you know what I mean. It's astonishing, isn't it? And I can, the more I believed it from the beginning, but the more I hear, the more I get a sense also that there was a plan here, and that you were the, unfortunately, the people that had to make the sacrifice. But look where things are at now.
Well, Father Boyle, who did Kevin's funeral, great man, and he was in the Newry parish for quite a while. But the morning after Kevin's funeral, he came up to the house and he gave us a picture. He said, "I don't know how this appeared in the parish office," he said, "because I got it years ago and didn't know what to do with it. But it is a lovely picture, and it is of, you can know that it's Jesus, and he's just hugging somebody."
Mm.
And you would know by the back of the head, it's a young person. Oh. And there's sort of like the dove above. And it's just, it's saying, Jesus, welcome in the moment, say, thank you, you're home now.
Yeah.
You've done your job.
Oh, wow. And I know it's emotional, but that's very comforting.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, because you know he's safe and sound.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Totally safe.
Kevin, because I keep calling Kevin. And do you know what, Colin? Yeah. I've interviewed a couple of times, and the amount of times I've called you Kevin. But do you know what? In a way, I'm going to put it down to what we've been talking about,
exactly.
Okay?
Yeah.
But Colin, you're both still involved in all, but thankfully, hopefully, you'll get a little bit more time for yourselves. It's clear that this is for many generations to come. And how do you feel? How close are you? Do you think you've got this sort of... you've got this in a space that if you two decided to go after Mallorca for the rest of your lives, right, that it can function and continue to do what you want it to do.
Well, we say we've got the right man in charge in the office now,
yeah,
Jemmert, and I mean, he's only been there a year, and I mean, he's fantastic, not just in his empathy and his ability to talk to families, but also in getting
the structure
right. You know, I mean, as I say, Maria did an awful lot, and Olivia is brilliant too. I mean, and we're getting the structures in and cemented, so that in 50 years the Kevin Bell will still be bringing people home, or in 100 years or whatever, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, like, if you get the RNLI, for an example, you know, we call them the fourth emergency service, but they're not routinely funded by the state. It's through, and I'm trying to think of, it's not that it can't be an emergency services, but the Kevin Bell Repatriation Trust is just established as part of sort of that network of supports for people, and it's astonishing what.
Yeah, we're like first responders.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. It's part of that case, branch, you know. And as you say, Colin, you're so right. You know, and it's a 2.5 families and individuals helped so far. But as you say, every parish. I mean, Kilcar, Donegal Town, Mount Charlotte. I mean, I could list them all. Really, it's astonishing. Other than keeping him busy and from under your feet, Ethna, what do you like to do yourself, or what?
Well, I love doing plays and dramas. I've been involved in music.
On the stage, behind the stage?
On the stage.
Right, lovely.
Yeah, and plays. As I say, I'm better on the stage pretending to be somebody else.
Yes.
I find it hard being myself. I'll stay in the background a bit. I let Colin do all the talking, and I'll keep his feet in the ground.
That's not to say she doesn't talk enough, at my
No, I would say so. But when you go to the stage, that's when the real Ethna comes out, albeit behind the character.
A character, yes. I enjoy doing that, and I love looking after the grandchildren. We have three grandchildren.
Mm.
Daniel is 12, Niamh is 8, and Oisin is just, he was 1 in February.
Wow, what great
and,
ages.
And just, it's magical. I just love being there for the grandchildren. Yeah.
And obviously the grandchildren as well for you, Colin, but how do you, is there anything that you enjoy yourself to pass the time, or are you just keeping yourself busy and that's what you love?
Right, no, I'd be big, always was big into sport.
GA.
I was a PE teacher for 40 years, so big into the GAA and Lapping life up at the minute in Croke Park every weekend, you know. So, so it's great, yeah.
Great for the marriage.
Yeah, of course. Be careful, because by the time this people listen to this down the line, you could be back in the doldrums. So.
I know. Yeah.
And of course, you've got that Donegal Tyrone rivalry. We love each other, really. Yeah, dad's from Tyrone.
We're down.
So.
But we're down.
Down. Well, down. Sorry, I don't know why I associated with Tyrone.
Yeah. No.
Down
no,
is even
down.
Better.
Oh,
down.
I
mean.
Yeah.
What?
Why would I associate your comments there with Tyrone?
No,
I don't know.
No,
so Dan, okay, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Brilliant stuff altogether.
Yeah. We're off to Croke Park now on Sunday.
Yeah.
We're down our plan.
And how's that going to go?
At the win, of course. Saturday. But on Saturday, yeah. But I know, but and of course we had that great win over Donegal earlier in the couple of months ago, so
No, we'll move on now.
Right, okay.
We'll move on now. I noted a senator, and he wouldn't be the first, calling for yous to be formally recognised for what yous do. I'm not sure. Would you enjoy that? I mean, maybe use it as an opportunity to get the word out, or to sort of say. But you don't strike me as a couple that really.
There have been some recognitions, and they're very much appreciated. But no,
it's not what we're doing it for.
Yeah,
you know, we're not there for recognition. But we appreciate people thinking of us. Yeah,
and totally appreciate that. But it's not for individual. It's whatever it is. It's all for the trust.
Yeah,
it's all.
It's an opportunity to get the message.
It is. Yeah,
to get. But individual.
I mean, recognition for us is recognition for the trust, and it's recognition for Kevin
and the team and the whole team. Yeah,
that's
totally.
Right.
Yeah.
And just as we wrap it up, I presume there are connections made in this whole process, that you've had such an impact on people's lives, even in the most desperate of times. But it's such a positive impact, dare I say it. I mean, talk to me a little bit about that Ethna, and the connections that have been made.
Unbelievable. Like, there's the McDermott's in Oma. We were at a horse was killed in Perth 10 years ago, and we were at a sister's wedding. We've been at housewarming parties, but we're actually up at the mummy's birthday party there at the beginning of the month. There's the Brady's in Sligo. There's the Drennan's. There's, if I start naming people, then I'm going to leave people out.
I know.
It was very foolish to do. But we have made great friends.
Yeah.
And no matter, just whenever you get to meet the families, and there's no pretense, everybody, they're just, you're thrown into that situation.
And I can just see you sitting down, maybe even particularly with the mum, and you're just reminiscing about your kids and
totally.
Keeping them. Yeah. There and evident, and there's a not counselling, but there's a process going on there.
Just
as well.
Chat.
Yeah. Are you a chatter, Colin, or are you, do you keep your cards close to your chest? Are you more of a listener with Ethna? Maybe.
I wouldn't get it. I'd get the odd word in, just
but that might.
I'm a good listener.
Yeah.
Is he really?
Aren't I?
Definitely not. Oh my goodness.
It's in one ear and out the other.
it's the secret to a happy marriage.
Yes,
but listen, these are absolutely wonderful. Thanks so much for everything that you do. It's impossible to explain to you guys, but hopefully you know the regard with which you're held in, and you have Kevin's name on everyone's lips too. Not just those that you help, but there's very few charities with the name recognition, and it's not all through, very sadly, people having to engage with it, and it's not through advertisement. I think it's down to yous and what yous do and how you know, but it's amazing what you do for this country, for both sides of the border as well. It's remarkable.
It's just remarkable support that we get. We couldn't do it if we didn't have the support.
Yeah.
As I say, we're just accommodating it in Kevin's name.
Brilliant. Both of you, thanks so much.
Well, thank
pleasure.
You spend more time now in Donegal.
Hopefully,
Okay, good stuff. Right. Thank you so very much for joining us. That was, of course, Colin and Ethna Bell. Thanks once again, Ethna and Colin, two amazing people. And what an impact they've had on so many people at some of the most difficult times in their lives.
If you enjoyed this podcast, don't forget we've got dozens of you to listen back to. Just search the Greg Hughes podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or check them out, the back catalogue on highlandradio.com. If you've got any feedback, guest suggestions, anything you want to say in relation to the podcast, email its researcher and producer. That is Caroline Orr at highlandradio.com. Her email, Caroline Orr at highlandradio.com. And we'll be back with another episode real soon.